Hello. Welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/RollTogetherRPG/schedule. Please do leave a review, and we look forward to adventuring together.
Welcome to Talk Together. Thank you for joining us for an evening of talking about Dungeons and Dragons. I'm Rebecca Hare. I will be your host tonight, and I am chatting to the marvelous Lola Johnson, who you can see right here. So first of all, Lola, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about you.
I'm Lola Johnson. I have been playing D&D for only 5 or 6 years now. But I enjoy it greatly, and it's a lot of fun. In my day job, I dye yarn and design knitwear patterns and teach knitting techniques and fun stuff like that. So
that is so cool. How did you get into that?
So at university, I was part of the Stitch and Bitch Society and became one of the committee members. We were looking for workshops to teach, and we thought that would be fun, so I taught myself, and it's really addictive. So now I do it as a job, much to my parents' consternation.
Are you adulting correctly if you aren't concerning your parents?
That's true.
That sounds amazing. What's the best bit of your day job?
There's so many different best bits. In dyeing yarn, it's very much being able to just play with color on yarn and try and bring the things in my head to life and watching that come together in a beautiful colorway. That's great. With designing, it's very much I want to do this thing, and then kind of going, okay, I could do it this way, or I could do it this way, right? As in this would be a lot of fun doing it that way. Teaching, it's just the fact that I love being able to share my love of these things with other people, and watching them going from not getting it to that click moment, that's amazing. That's really fulfilling.
That's incredible. And then on top of that, you play Dungeons and Dragons on the internet.
Yeah. Well, just started.
It counts. You've started. It sounds fantastic. And that is, of course, I now quite want to sit here and have a conversation about dyeing yarn for an hour, but people did tune in for Dungeons and Dragons, so maybe we'll have to do that off stream. But so tonight we'll be going through some questions and some anecdotes, and as always the dice will decide the questions. But before we kick off, some housekeeping. The stream will run for about an hour. We are, as always, delighted to be sponsored by Hero Forge, Ultra Pro and Elderwood Academy, and to be supported by D&D Beyond, Warriors of Waterdeep and Level Up Dice. We are, all of us, Roll Together RPG on all social media. And as always, a huge thank you to our D20 Club on Patreon, our brilliant, beautiful dice heads. Our shows are available as podcasts pretty much everywhere. Just search Roll Together RPG on your favorite podcasting app. With that all under our belt, shall we roll the dice and ask our first question? Ooh, that is, to start with, a 3, which is, what is your favourite character class?
I think it's got to be Druid.
Correct.
I've got a couple of Druid characters at the moment, most notably the one that I'm playing in The Lonely House of Neverwinter.
Can you tell us more about that druid? Because it only streamed on Tuesdays and people might not have watched it. Can you tell us who this druid is?
So my character is Swaski. Pronouns are they, them for my character. And they are a tiefling, Circle of Stars druid. And it's really fun to explore Circle of Stars as a druid class, because obviously it's a lot of them are quite different. And I know that a lot of people tend to play Circle of the Moon because it has that advantage of wild shape, whilst the other circles tend to place wild shape as a much lower priority, but let you do some really fun, cool stuff with the circle abilities.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy when playing Swati. For their backstory, I've really enjoyed the fact that I've used their class and subclass to link it into their backstory and kind of show how they've developed as a person. Obviously, you won't see the backstory necessarily in the tutorial, but if you can see my character sheet, then it is on there.
Spoilers, if we look on your notes page, we might find all of your backstory. Amazing. I cannot wait for Tuesday and I will click on it. Amazing. So if you've got your Circle of Stars, you said you've got a couple of druids. What are your other subclasses?
So I've got Circle of the Shepherd, which is such an underrated class.
I know nothing about it.
Okay, so Circle of the Shepherd is a class that uses spirits for different buffs for yourself and the other characters.
Cool.
Within a 30-foot range. It also uses... It focuses very much on summoning. So working with summoning different fae, different beasts to basically add in extra players on your... like allies, essentially, on the party side.
Mm.
So... I mean, this is probably it's going to be hotly contested, but I think that a Circle of the Shepherd Druid, like, that's already reached Mighty Summoner level, so level 6, could happily tank it. Like, well, when I say tank, like, could do, like, some big combats by themselves, because Mighty Summoner has the ability to let you bring in 8, like, magical... 8 magical creatures, essentially, that will do magical damage, which is one of the big things that is a problem when with like normal summoning, and can be a problem for the party depending on the challenge rating of the monster or enemy. And so I think like a really, really good example of how to play Mighty Summoner well is Erika Ishii. And in the 7 Dimension 20, because that is such a beautiful power gaming move with that that circle. I'm trying not to let this be a love letter to Erika Ishii.
Love letters to Erika Ishii are always encouraged.
Yeah, they're amazing. So, but yeah, so there's so much available in all the different circles, and I think that if you consistently play Circle of the Moon Druid, you're missing out on some of the really amazing stuff. But that's not to knock Circle of the Moon, because if you really kind of do your research, plan out like your best wild shapes, your best creatures that you can wild shape into, then it's a fantastic option, and it gives you like the ability to be both kind of a healer, a tank, and various other things, because you get so much from being able to wild shape.
For sure. I think Moon is also a really nice one if you're relatively new to the game and you want to play a druid, because there's slightly fewer mechanics to get a handle on, and especially if your DM has been kind and given you some stats for, say, 5 wild shapes.
Yeah.
That was one of my first characters, was a Circle of the Moon Druid, because I didn't really know what I was doing still at this point. And it was like, right, I can turn into a direwolf and a brown bear, and I can cast Shillelagh. Cool, I'm on it.
yeah, it's a really good choice for if you're just trying out druid, absolutely. Yeah. It reminds me of my first character, not a druid, was a level one fighter, then everything else was in wizard.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they died and got resurrected and just came back as a necromantic wizard, like with like a new kind of haunted one sort of background.
That's really cool. I love that. Yeah, multi-classing is not one of my strengths. I like to sort of start and then see how far I can push one class. But the idea of, oh, well, I'm dead. Okay, I guess I'm a wizard. It's fantastic.
Yeah. No, I mean, I have a friend that has brought multi-classing to an art form. Like, I can't remember his latest character that he was talking about, but I think there were three different classes because they were starting at level 8 or something. And yeah. But then he has been playing since D&D first came out.
Oh, so that's just cheating then, isn't it?
Yeah. He's had a lot of time to hone his craft.
That sounds fantastic. So before I roll the dice again, back to druids because they are the best. If you could only play one subclass, which one druid subclass, what would you pick and why is it obviously Wildfire?
I haven't actually played Wildfire yet. I have seen people playing it, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. That's really hard. Like, there's just so much available in all of them. I mean, I think I would probably discount Circle of the Land. Maybe that's a thing, but yeah. I just really like Circle of the Shepherd just because it lets you do so much and be so much the party at the same time.
It sounds brilliant. And there's always fun playing one that you haven't seen played 1,000 times elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's always quite nice knowing that you're not just doing, oh, that again. Oh, amazing. I'm glad that you are correct that druids are the best class. Shall we roll the dice again?
Yes.
Ooh, keep rolling low numbers. This is a 3. 3 is
what we just did.
What we've just done. Oh no, I'm glad you're awake. I'm not. 15. Ooh, 15. We're staying on characters.
Okay.
Where do you start when making a character?
Oh. So it really depends. It could be dependent on the party, or it could be dependent on kind of a session. Like, so when I say dependent on the party, it could be party discussion, session zero, if we're creating characters in that setting. And then it'll kind of be like, oh, maybe someone made a joke about something and I'm like, oh wait, no, I see that happening. Or I will be like, okay, I haven't played this character class or race before, and I really want to see a way that I can make them work in a way that is like great backstory wise, can be like well meshed in terms of the characters, like how I play that character. So I sometimes start there, or I'll literally just be like, okay, someone has said I need to play this class. Fine. Yeah. What does the world look like? How do I want to fit into the world? What does my character want to address in the thing? Like, I ask myself questions about what my character would be like in relation to the rest of the world, and then I create my character. So it's several different angles, but it's always fun.
That's really cool. Do you ever get stuck?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes, like, I think there's definitely an element of, especially if you're just doing it in isolation, it can be quite easy to get stuck. If you do have some other input from other people, like, it's especially if you're just getting started, like, it's a great idea to talk through your characters and players with other people in the party or your DM, because they can give you some really great advice on like how you might want to fit into the party, or like what could be a cool like mix, or just kind of like giving you some options that you might not have thought about, like, oh, well, you know, with Warlock, you can do this, this, and that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So for The Lonely House, where did you start?
Okay. The Lonely House, I started in a conversation with Sean and Chris.
That's we were a great start.
Yeah, we were having like an initial conversation, and we were joking about characters for the game, and I think I was saying something about, oh, I haven't played a tiefling, and I was messing about with like different voices, and then for some reason I was like, oh, I really want to play like a cottagecore tiefling. It's like obsessed with fashion and everything. Now Swaski isn't quite that character, but the initial influence definitely developed from that.
That's amazing. How did you get from cottagecore tiefling to Circle of the Stars druid?
Okay, so cottagecore immediately said druid to me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, because I was like, they have to be one with nature and everything. And Circle of the Stars, I thought, okay, they're someone that will spend a reasonable amount of time outside, being within nature. And I was also just like, well, I like the idea of them kind of getting omens and everything from the stars. And it just kind of developed from there. I had looked at different circles. I considered Circle of Wildfire, but it wasn't quite what I wanted for Swaski. So I know.
It's fine. Other druid subclasses are available.
Yes. But yeah, I just thought this ties in with how I want my backstory to look and like the story that I want my character to tell. But they've kept the fact that Swaski is a fancy boy. Fancy.
What are their fanciest moments so far?
Oof. I mean, the general... Oh no, that's an episode 2 thing. I won't tell you that.
Good catch.
Mm-hmm. They are dressed in... They've foregone armor for the for style, essentially.
Some, of course.
An absolutely gorgeous, deep plunging cut waistcoat with a nice bishop sleeve, like a big bishop sleeve top, and like gradient colored palazzo pants as well. I know.
That's incredible.
And this is their like, I'm strolling around and running around. And also a big decision that I made is taking magic initiate for the purpose of getting prestidigitation.
I mean, it is the best spell, but also that's quite an intense commitment.
I was just like, Swaski is that person. They have to be able to like be perfect at a moment's notice.
Reasonable.
So I mean, they can be practical. I mean, like, the nature of being a druid means they have to be. Mm-hmm. And I think the big thing about them having sort of settled in Neverwinter for the past couple of years is that they've had the opportunity to be really fancy. But when it comes to being practical, they have the tools to make that outfit very like work for being practical very quickly. So
oh, they sound incredible. I cannot wait to see more of them. It's brilliant. How do they fit in with the rest of the party with their fancy?
I don't know. I feel like the party, and as you will have seen if you caught the first episode, or like if you haven't, go watch it and then come back.
On YouTube, the mods can put the YouTube link in the chat now. Yeah. Thanks, mods.
Yes. So at the moment, the party is very much a mishmash of people that have kind of come together to investigate this situation with The Lonely House, essentially. So in terms of fitting in with the party, I wouldn't say that they fit in as such, but they do have connections to one of the other characters. They've met before, and I think one of the things that probably won't come up, they are a massive fan of going out and dancing, and it's kind of the only time that they let down their hair in terms of kind of being really buttoned up and like charming and everything else. It's very much like, let's go dance, let your hair loose, like. And so in the backstory, I don't know if I've written it in there, but have come up with a place in Neverwinter with Sean called, I've forgotten the name, I'll probably have to go back and look at it, but it is in the Docks District, and it is a dance hall, like the you kind of get like the sailors and kind of people coming back and like just basically letting the hair down. You've got music like Flogging Molly playing, general music and that kind of thing. That's kind of and I think they've really connected with Juliet in that respect, but that's a bit of shared backstory that you probably won't get in the show. Well, there's a brief discussion of it in the first episode.
Oh, okay. So eyes open for that if you're going back to watch it. Oh, that sounds wonderful. I am sure that anyone who has not yet caught up with it is now scurrying to do so. It sounds completely brilliant. And Sean is a spectacular DM.
He is, yes.
Oh, he's so wonderful. Shall we roll the date?
Uh-huh.
Ah, well, that was beautifully serendipitous. It's a 10, which is, what do you like in a DM?
Okay. Like Sean is a DM. No, I think someone that is willing to work with their players,
mm-hmm.
and generally keep, well, yeah, essentially someone who's willing to work with their players and happy to kind of field discussions in game and outside. And I've played with quite a few groups, and I love a lot of different things about the different DMs that I have. I have one DM who ran like a short campaign for us, and it kind of followed the tenets of cost. And one of the things that was great about that is because it allowed us as a group to have really intense discussions in a space that we made safe for each other. And a lot of that was facilitated by the DM, as well as putting a lot of effort into making the gameplay tell that story that we could then reflect on.
Mm.
So I think in that case, being able to like have hard discussions in game and outside game, because even though like we play in fantasy worlds, we do touch on like issues that happen in our world, and sometimes they tend to just kind of get glossed over,
yeah,
or not treated in such a way that like acknowledges the impact that can impacts like a wide range, mm-hmm. of TTRPG players. So like I definitely value that, like being able to have hard discussions and like having discussions with the players and everything else, and allowing for things to be sensitively and discussed, essentially, as well as putting the work in just to give us great gameplay.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Putting you on the spot a tiny bit, can you think of a specific example of that kind of creating space for difficult discussions from a DM? Is there one that like stands out as a really good example of it?
I don't know. I don't know how much I can bring in from my group to be like, this is a discussion we had. So,
yeah, reasonable. Another group privacy is definitely fine.
Yeah.
Fair. Still, yeah, that is fantastic. Do you have that kind of vibe from a DM across all your different games, or does it vary with who you play?
Yeah, I mean, obviously not. There isn't the space for some of that in all games. There's definitely some games where it's more comfortable to be like, okay, yeah, this is a discussion we can have. You're not just going to throw a thing in there and as a like, this is just a story thing that I'm throwing in carelessly kind of thing. So yeah, there's some element of that in all my games.
That sounds fantastic. Do you use the kind of session zero that I know Roll Together does quite a lot to put hard and soft boundaries in place before you even start?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is, especially if you're playing a campaign, be it like a few sessions or like a long running campaign, a session zero is so important. Yeah. Because it basically gives you, especially if it's people with people that you don't know. If you're starting out, then it's an opportunity to kind of get you all on the same sort of page and assess whether the group and the game is going to work for you, as well as discussing those, like, okay, these are things that we need to avoid. We can't have it in this game. And like, just having that allowance is really important, as well as the group that I was talking about. We are a range of people that have different neurodiversities and disabilities as well, and belong to marginalized groups. So it's really important to have those discussions and allow, because what might be fine for some people might be incredibly triggering for others. And it's really important to, within game, because it should be fun, as well as being able to tackle different things if you want to within game, you don't want it to exclude people. Sure. And it's also 100% totally fair if you have that session zero and decide this is not the game for me. That is totally okay.
I think that's a really good point. And we don't talk about that one enough, I think. There's lots about, oh, D&D is fun. D&D is for everyone. Do a session zero, use your safety tools. All important and brilliant. But also, yeah, it's just okay to be like, yep, this group of people are lovely and they're going to play a really fun deck game that I do not want to be a part of because it's not my type of fun.
Yep.
Yep. And there should be no guilt whatsoever in being like, cool, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. Like, it's... ultimately, it's up to you what time of game you want to play. Yes, there's a whole element of it is the party and the DM's game all together. But if a game is going to be too much for you in some aspects and that doesn't mesh well with the group, then maybe that's not a group in this game that you need to be a part of. And like, it is very important to... not just bound to group dynamics in some respects for that.
Yes, and not just sit there and be socialized to be nice and polite and go, okay.
But mm-hmm.
go, not for me.
Yeah.
And there's a whole extra dimension when you agree to play on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you find any of that with character creation or talking to Sean this time around? Any, again, no personal details, you know, privacy, but... mm-hmm. Did you notice a difference with your character creation and the session zero with the extra line of this is going on the internet, this is not a home game?
I didn't particularly feel that way, mostly because I'm me and I'm going to play the character.
Amazing.
The way that works. Obviously, observing all the things that we as a group have discussed and have like said, yeah, no, this is a hard limit for us to avoid, and this needs to be like a phase if it's going to bring up that kind of thing. Obviously, like, some of that figured in when I was creating my character, but like, outside of those things, yeah, it was fine. I didn't adapt my character for the fact that it was going to be three people. So if you hate my character, okay.
Right, buddy, for you.
You love my character. Thank you.
Amazing. Shall we have another one?
Yes.
Okay. Doo-ba-doo. Let me find my list of questions. Ooh, this is a 5. How do you feel about cosplay?
Ooh. I love cosplay. And I think that the beauty of it is that it's a way of celebrating like your fandom And as someone whose business is quite literally dyeing yarn inspired by all my fandoms, then yeah, I am 100% for it. And it's really important to me that cosplay is for everyone and it shouldn't be gatekeeped. Because mm-hmm. there is a lot of it that happens. And it's really important that, like, the general message is that cosplay is for everyone. And it shouldn't discriminate on the basis of, oh, this is, you had this amount of time or funds to put into this,
yeah,
for example. And so this is what you created. You still put time and effort and love. Or even if you bought the character, you are still celebrating the your fandom in that way. And I think it's incredibly important that that is even just that base level access is important for everybody. And I think it's incredibly important that not just that in terms of accessibility, I think it's important that we look at it and don't gatekeep on the basis of race either.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, if you love a fandom and you want to cosplay it, regardless of your race, you should be able to do that. Obviously, the way you do it has to be culturally appropriate. And like, I don't want to see anybody be doing like blackface, brownface, or any of that. Like, that's some nonsense. That's
reasonable.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really important that cosplay is just a way of celebrating your fandom, and it should be accessible to everyone. So I'm going to come for all you gatekeepers.
You have been warned. Do you have a favorite character you cosplay as?
So I keep being like, I'm going to do it, because I used to go to a lot of conventions, and for me, I didn't tend to specifically cosplay a character. I always used to do a kind of, like, I had a like semi-steampunk Victorian original character that I put an outfit together for. So I have this gorgeous, like, floor-length riding jacket that I made.
Ooh.
Some like gray kind of palazzo pants, because I wanted the adaptability of it. Oh, it could look like a skirt, but also actually is trousers and like underbust corset and everything else. So it's like a mishmash of things I was able to make. And when I say make, I made this jacket back when I was 18 and had a lot more time on my hands.
That's amazing.
Than now, for example. Mm-hmm. And other things that I have bought or put together as part of my character. The one other cosplay that I do want to do, and I will eventually get to, is Zoe Washburn.
I don't know who that is.
From Firefly.
Oh, Zoe from Firefly. Yeah. Yes, of course I know who that is. She's yes. amazing.
Yeah. So I loved Firefly back then, obviously. Watching it again,
it's got a bit sad now, hasn't it?
I mean, it's not necessarily it getting a bit sad. It's looking at it from the perspective of what I know and understand now.
Yeah.
And understanding the issues that are brought up within it,
yeah,
that are kind of ignored or glossed over, but do have an impact. But I do hold both Zoe and Hoban like as big, like they're my favorite characters, and I desperately wanted to do a Zoe cosplay to the extent that my friend was gonna make me like a gun to go with it, and we were like putting all the fixtures and everything together, and I'd got the fabric to make an outfit, but I haven't had time.
Okay, do you think it will happen one day?
One day.
One day. But that future when we all have unlimited time and resources.
Yeah. That, and also when I stop just working at conventions, like somehow there's been this, I go to conventions to have fun. I go to conventions to work, but also have fun and talk to people. But like after dealer's room hours, you know what I mean? So I think it'll probably happen when I'm back in maybe I can hire someone to do my stand for the entire weekend so that I can go and have fun or like switch off with them. So yeah.
Oh, it sounds incredible though. Oh yeah, I would like to see it if you put photos on Twitter. Shall we roll again?
Sure, yeah.
Amazing. Ooh, this is a 17, controversial question. A lot of people have a lot of opinions on this. How do you feel about fudging roles?
Okay, so... In terms of players, I think that, like... probably not advisable. Because the dice are there to kind of add that element of randomness, and you can't really control how that works. In the DM's case, if they're not being an asshole about it, then fine, especially if it's like about the dice telling a story. For example, if it works in this situation and doesn't like, or if they're like, I don't really want to outright TPK my players right now kind of thing. Right. Or I definitely understand it from that standpoint. Obviously, they're the ones behind the screen and they're telling a story. If they're doing it just to be an asshole, then no, that's not cool. I think it's very much a kind of case-by-case basis. And also, especially if you're going to be doing it, you have to realize that in some cases, it's going to affect the group. Yeah, and you have to be like... the whole actual game, once you're in game, it's not just about you, it's about the like the whole group and how you work together. And if you're constantly going to be fudging your rules so that you can do stuff that impacts what other people do, then that's, you're not being a team player or whatever within your group. Obviously, if the group dynamics are such that your character is separate from the rest of the party, perhaps it doesn't affect them as much. But yeah, like it has to be considered in a on a kind of case by case basis within the dynamics of the group.
It's a really good point, thinking about doing it in a group, because on your own it could be like, hey, it doesn't matter, it's only affecting my character, let's go.
Yeah.
Then actually, if therefore your character never misses an attack or is never in a weak or vulnerable situation, kind of sucks for everyone else.
Yeah, it will interfere with how the, because if you're basically like, no, I'm always this, and that means that because I do this, I get to take up this much time in my turn because of this. Like, that's maybe your playstyle, and maybe that's just you being an asshole.
You talk about DM fudging. Do you DM at all?
I do. Like, not often. But I am working on a couple of things. I have homebrew kind of world that... well, not fully homebrew, but it's kind of like a mishmash of homebrew, mishmash of Wizard of the Coast. I've done a couple of different sessions with friends.
Cool.
That are, like, published stuff. Not necessarily all... like the standard published adventures or anything else, but yeah, like I'm looking forward to being able to DM the campaign I have in mind, but that might be a year or more in coming. Like, I still have some things that I need to iron out about the world, but I love the idea, and I hope other people love it enough to want to play it. It's essentially focused around the plane of dreams.
Cool.
And kind of has, it's, there's this organization that kind of does stuff in dream, and players are characters that that have been found and recruited because they're particularly skilled at lucid dreaming, which gives them the skills to go into dreams and take up, like, do certain dusts and things like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Sorry.
How did you, How did you get into DMing?
Mostly the like age-old thing of, oh, we want to play a game, but who DMs kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And giving my DM or my friends like the opportunity to get to play again. And that's good fun. Because I fully appreciate the time and effort that goes into being a DM and putting the work together. So like sometimes giving them a break is good. Yeah.
Do you prefer to play or to DM?
I think I prefer playing, but that might just be because I haven't DM'd a lot. Mm-hmm. If you know what I mean. Like I have ideas and I would love the opportunity to kind of bring them out and have people play them and give me feedback. And I would love for people to enjoy what I'm putting together. But finding the time to put it together mm-hmm. is a challenge. So yeah, I haven't had as much time to DM as like I would necessarily like, but I wouldn't necessarily say, okay, I'll DM versus getting the opportunity to play.
Gotcha. Yeah, healthy balance sounds good. No one seems to want to be the forever DM, but shall we roll again?
Yeah.
Let's see what we get. Ooh, 14. Less controversial. What is the funniest moment you have experienced in game?
Okay, so this happened actually quite recently. And it was essentially we were in a situation where the world around us has basically kind of almost gone up in flames. Everything is like people are fighting, a lot of things are on fire, people are looking for a place to live and essentially breaking into homes where people haven't been in the last kind of couple of days essentially. And one of the characters in our party has a house that has some magical properties essentially that means that it's nearly impossible to break into. You have to have access. It's part of a set of four houses that also belong to the dwarves, blah blah. There's a lot of backstory in it that that is to do with the world. Anyway, the dwarves have left. We managed to circumvent the people that are trying to break in outside situation, get into the house. And the house essentially is this kind of magical construct type thing that is like, that has various things, but you can essentially change stuff around to fit you best. And the first thing the house does is essentially say, hey, here are these houses. This was yours, but now all of this is yours. And let's remove all of the partitions. And you can then choose to do whatever you want with it like later on.
Wow.
And the DM gives the player the manual for it. As this happens, there are people that have managed to break in down the other side of the house. And down the other side of the houses. And they hear this and they're like, oh, crap, kind of thing. And they are in there. Essentially, it was set up as a combat and they're trying to attack the players. So we go into it kind of being like, oh, yes, OK, we'll try and get into a good position. I made some really bad stealth rolls, like as a rogue.
Oh, no.
Like level one. So like it's not as. Yeah, so it's just like, oh, we squishy and like very close to death. And there were like six or seven of them. But so the DM had set this up as a combat and we were like, okay, we have to manage it because there are actually only three of us at the moment because one of our players isn't feeling too good and can't play.
Okay.
And so we're trying to like set ourselves up. And then the player that has just got the manual is like, actually, hang on, can I do this shenanigan thing and just reconfigure the house? Like to get them to like shut them in a small space so we can actually get them to talk instead of attacking us.
That's amazing.
The DM fully was like, the look on his face was like, I had to shut off his camera, step away and swear for a bit, because he has thought, okay, this will be a cool thing for later, not this will be something that the characters can then exploit. So it ended up turning into like this kind of Home Alone situation where I was using my crossbow to like herd people without actually attacking them. And the other PC was like, okay, I'm going to use a grease spell just to like get some side, like, yeah. It was just, it was the fact that, like, just from some completely random quick thinking, I personally would not have thought to do it. But the other player, like, the fact that he thought of it, having been given this tool and been like, wait, I can I just use this? It, like, it was honestly the funniest moment ever, from being like what would have been a really difficult combat to, oh no, we're just going to herd them into this place so we can talk to them.
That is amazing. What happened next?
Oh no, the DM was like, okay, fine, I'll let you do it. Like, that was not my intention. But, and so it was just, it ended up just being really fun narratively, as opposed to, and I think that's what I love, the being adaptable as well. So that's another thing I love about a good DM, is being adaptable to like players throwing situations at you and being like, okay, you know what, yeah, we can roll with this kind of thing, but also being totally able to say no, actually that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Especially if you want to do something that's far too shenanigan-y that would impact how other players play their game as well. Yeah. But that one was just, it was just so funny, and we were all like fooling around laughing, especially since the DM had to be like, I'm gonna turn off my camera for a second.
Oh, that's amazing. But level one.
Yeah.
So squishy. Is it a new campaign?
It's the second campaign I've played with this group.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a relatively new campaign. We've had two sessions.
That can be the best. People you know and love and trust.
Yeah.
But then brand new characters starting all over again. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm very glad there wasn't a TPK.
Yeah. Yeah. it's great as well, because our previous campaign, it was supposed to only run for a certain amount of sessions, but it ended when one of the characters died, and that was like a very bittersweet thing. And it fit with the story. It gave the rest of our characters a lot of learning. Like, but it was just, when you lose a party member, like, especially when you kind of develop that relationship within your characters as well as yourselves, it can be like, it can really hurt, even if it's not your character.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. So getting some shenanigans back in.
Yeah.
That's needed. Oh, that is wonderful. We still have time for a couple more questions.
Oh, fantastic.
I will roll again. Ooh, we have 16.
Okay.
Very personal, but hopefully not too personal question. If you could make yourself in D&D, who would you be?
I'm not sure I know. In terms of, like, as a fantasy character?
Yes. Because if it was for real, we'd all just be, like, level 0.5 human.
I think there's an element of, I think this probably ties in very much into how I feel about tabletop gaming. But there's definitely an element of kind of wish fulfillment and something else. So I guess I would probably play a character that was very much representative of me exactly, but with some other elements, and hopefully in a world that accommodated like me as I am within that. I don't know if that really makes sense.
No, I think so. So you wouldn't go, I will be a tiefling. You'd stick with human.
Yeah, I would probably stick with human. And I would probably take some of my like everyday things, like probably maybe my neurodiversity would mean that, okay, maybe it's a superpower. Maybe it means that like either I choose to take a feat that enables that to be a superpower, i.e. okay, my brain works differently and that means I can do this thing.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But yeah, no, I think that tabletop RPGs can be a very powerful space for exploring who you are and who you want to be, as well as also being able to step away from that and like explore something different. But I think there was a character at one point that I wanted to play that was essentially me, but what my life may look like in the future, like being a disabled person as well, like what that may mean for me, but actually making the accommodations that I need to make or etc. kind of thing. And I think that like if I was to make myself specifically and in a game, then yeah, I would probably just make me with like, okay, let's take the magic initiate or other type of feat that gives me some magic for neurodiversity. Let's like bring in those accommodations that I don't give myself, kind of thing. And I think that's really powerful to be like, yeah, this is what life could look like, kind of thing. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
It really did. That's a really cool way of thinking about it. Yeah. Yeah, that's fascinating. I was like, oh, I'll be an elf because elves are fun. But no, that's a much more thoughtful answer. What do you have any thoughts on class then, if that was sort of how you were building?
I think I would just do Galadison again. I'm just making me. Like, so I would probably be, maybe I'd be a bard. And I make yarn. Yarn is my like. I
that would
give
be the
you
coolest
a...
bard. That would be amazing.
I'm like, I think that my bardic inspiration would be like, I created this yarn because I think it best represents you. Pretty colors.
I would be really inspired. Someone made hand me a beautiful thing and was like, I made this because it represents you. I would definitely get at least a D8. That's awesome.
And I think it's interesting because I don't personally see myself as a bard, but I am a creative person, and a lot of my major pursuits and things like that are being creative, either making stuff with my hands or like writing poetry and like playing games that require like creative thought and so on. So I think me personally in a fantasy world, I'm a bard.
Oh, it's brilliant. Because I was thinking maybe artificer, because that's very working with hands, but that's
I love artificer as well, but I'm just like, maybe I'm multi-class.
I love it though, not leaning towards the mechanical tinkery, look, I made something, but towards the like, nope, this is my art, my craft, and I have made a beautiful thing and it's magic now.
Yeah, and I think
amazing.
Specifically that, because it's so important to me to be able to share my love of the craft thing. And yeah, okay, in this capitalist world, we do have to like make money off things and so on to live and all that. Oof. Yeah, but yeah, like the biggest thing is being able to create, and also people like, I believe that color itself is something that's so evocative and it can elicit so many different emotions, and being able to kind of give that to somebody and that have them have emotions about it or like elicit, like that is important to me. Like when someone comes and says, I opened the package and it was literally just, it was the most beautiful thing. It made me so happy. I cried, like that kind of thing. That's like, this is part of why I do what I do.
Yeah. That's amazing. And in D&D, you could even have some kind of magical synesthesia where it literally does the colours create the spell.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I would love to see someone play a yarn bard.
Oh God.
A yard? A barn.
Do I have to play myself now? Maybe I do.
I mean, maybe you should. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, what a fantastic answer. And now I just want to go and like think about that for a while. But we have time for one more question. So I'll ask you one more question and then I'll go think about yarn magic. That was a 5, which we've already had. So I will roll again. That was a 9, which is quite a nice one for us to end on, I think. What would you say to a new player?
Okay. Have fun. TTRPGs are a place to explore and have fun and connect with people by being able to be yourself or like a fantasy version of yourself, or even just trying on something completely new. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as a new player, don't worry too much that you're completely new at it. Like, a good DM and good party will support you through it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's important to do your best to have fun and like work on those connections within the group, because it is a group game. Unless, of course, you're doing a solo thing with one DM. So it's important to work together and enjoy yourselves, but also absolutely don't get sucked in, or don't feel like you have to stay in something because you're a new player if it's not working for you, or it's an environment that like is toxic for you. Like, you are not in the wrong if you need to leave. That's okay, right? So go have fun. If it's not fun, talk about it. And if you're with a good DM and good group, then they will address these things. If you're not, it's okay to leave.
Yeah, completely. We talk about it's fun, it should be fun all the time. But the extra caveat of it being fun doesn't mean you gritting your teeth and not saying something, yeah. So not to rock the boat. It's a really good point.
Yeah, your feelings are valid and important.
Oh, your feelings are valid and important. That is the best possible, I think, end to our time together. That is about all the time we have. Is there anything, Lola, you want to plug?
I don't know. I create yarn?
Yeah, you have yarn. Where do we find your yarn magic?
My business is called Third Vault Yarns. All of my yarn is sci-fi and fantasy inspired, because I'm a massive geek that did computer science and now creates yarn. So yeah, that can be found on thirdvaultyarns.com. I'm also on Instagram for my sins. So yeah, come check me out. And if you like yarn, if you're a creative person and you like working with it, then yeah, come buy some. I have Christmas things and like holiday things that aren't specifically Christmas related as well.
So. Amazing. And then also your new campaign has just started.
Yes.
Lonely House of Neverwinter. Can you plug one reason why people should watch it? Or multiple reasons, at least one.
Yeah. I'm like, one of men? Like, okay, so if you are a horror fan, then absolutely the podcast for you, because we are all like both completely horrified and having a lot of fun.
It's a great combination.
Also, you get to see what happens to my character after being bitten on, like, in Tuesday's episode by a Vargwheel. I'm still waiting to find out, so come check that out.
Yeah, for sure. If someone's not super great with horror, should they avoid it?
Quite possibly. Sean is great at making things creepy AF. So perhaps not the podcast for you, unless you're like, okay, I'm going to block out some time, and then I'm blocking out some self-care time after as well.
Good to know. Okay. I do know that Roll Together has some content warnings. So if the mod can pop them in chat, you can find out specifically what might be setting things off in The Lonely House and in the lovely folk horror Reaping of Golden Fields that we stream on Mondays. So that you can, if horror's not quite your thing, you can check out if there are things that make you go, nope, or things that you're actually fine with. Thank you so much, Lola. It has been an absolute pleasure. I cannot wait to see what happens to your poor character. And thank you everyone for joining us, being part of the show. If you enjoyed us, good, thank you. We stream this every single Friday from 6 till 7 p.m. GMT, and then we stream D&D games on Mondays and Tuesdays. On Mondays, 6 till 9 GMT, I am in. We stream the folk horror-y The Reaping of Golden Fields. Episode 2 is streaming on Monday, so you still have time to catch up. The marvelous Chris Hislop is being, by turns, bucolic and horrifying. And then on Tuesdays, currently streaming The Lonely House of Neverwinter, where you can catch Lola and their spectacular Stars Druid. And Sean is being, by all accounts, just straight horrifying. All our shows stream at twitch.tv/rolltogetherrpg, and there is a YouTube link in chat so you can catch up. And don't forget, you can also find us and hopefully enjoy us as a podcast. Once again, so many thanks to our D20 Club on Patreon, all of our wonderful sponsors and supporters, and as always, stay classy at the table.
Thank you.